Our next speaker is James Payne. Jim has been director of Litton Research and Analysis. He's also another contributing author to Opposing the Crusader State. He received his PhD in political science from the University of California at Berkeley, and he has taught at such universities as Yale, Wesleyan, Johns Hopkins, and Texas A&M. He's the author of many books, including A History of Force, Why Nations Arm, The Culture of Spending, Overcoming Welfare, Patterns of Conflict in Colombia, Labor and Politics in Peru, and so forth. So I'm very pleased to have Jim Payne.
I'm very concerned about the Iraq involvement, and I've been spending a lot of my research effort over the past years looking into the theories that got us into it and trying to test them out and seeing if there's any validity to these theories. And not to keep you in suspense, there isn't. The one aspect I want to look at in particular, it concerns this idea of nation building. I think one theme that drove the Bush administration in its invasion of Iraq was the idea that we could impose democracy on that country, which would be good for it and have a lot of other beneficial aspects for the whole region. The basic problem I see here, which troubles me, is that the meaning of the term democracy is very unclear. And those who are advocating that we establish it don't realize that there isn't an it, that there's a lot of contradictory and confusing ideas behind this term. If you look up the word in the dictionary, democracy, and you will see it says rule by the people. And when you first see that, it looks like a very impressive system because it conjures up the notion that everybody in the country is getting what he wants. If you want a cotton subsidy, you get it. If you want free shoes, you can have them. If you want a war in Iraq, you can have it. You have this notion of everybody getting what he wants. And if that's what democracy is, then it might be worth invading countries and killing a lot of people to impose it, because it'd practically be a nirvana. People would, be all happy. Well, what makes this so funny is if you do just a minute's thought, you discover that what one person wants, another doesn't want. And you can't have your cotton subsidy unless you take taxes from me, and so on. So you have to scale the definition of democracy down to rule by 51% of the people, which is quite a come down and not quite as happy a prospect, because you have the possibility of 49% of the people being very angry and oppressed and so forth. A little more thought reveals, of course, there's more than one issue to be decided. 2, 3, 4, 20 issues, so that very easily, in fact, almost certainly, if each of these were decided by 51%, the entire country would be disadvantaged by one or more of these decisions. So in principle, you could have, in a functioning majority rule democracy, the entire country angry at having lost one or more issue. A little more thought shows that this whole speaking about democracy as rule by people is a little artificial, because governments undertake thousands of decisions. They have hundreds and hundreds of programs that most of us can't even know about, let alone have an opinion about. The idea that we could control them altogether is absurd. Political scientists that look into this have realized this for many years. Robert Dahl is a very distinguished commentator on the theory of democracy and concludes that what democracy really is, it should be called rule by minorities. And if you think about each issue, like a cotton subsidy, it's, you know, 20 or 30, 50, 100 people wanted it, and that's why it's there. And on issue after issue, it's a very tiny minority that is responsible for the particular subsidy or policy. And these things aren't decided by the great mass of the 300 million Americans in any case. So again, we're reaching this kind of vanishing point of what is democracy, and we're not even clear in our own minds what it is. A policymaker who found this out the hard way is the Lieutenant Colonel John Fischel, who was the head of policy and strategy for our Panama involvement in 1989. He was given, it seems a little hard to believe, but actually the literal orders, which he copies out in his book, said, conduct nation-building operations to ensure democracy. That's the orders that were cut for him. And he, being a good soldier, he said, well, I better do it. And he started reading books on political science and so forth and discovered democracy was, for all intents and purposes, an undefined term, so that he was unable to come up with what he should do driving around in his Jeep to bring about a democracy there. I mean, you can have the orders. They sound rational, but the word at the core of the order is confused. For instance, Secretary of Defense could write, find Santa Claus and fix his sleigh. I mean, it sounds like English, right? But what would you actually do? So we're trying to impose, with this whole theory of nation building, we're trying to impose or implement, create an object which is very fuzzy in our minds. I do think there's something behind this term. I'm not going to suggest we simply abandon it, but I think we've been looking in the wrong direction. And I want to just take a few minutes here to suggest a new way of looking at democracy, or what we're trying to get at when we use the term. I think it's better to think of it not in terms of institutions, but as a kind of political health. We're trying to say the country that is a democracy is healthy in some political way. If we take the analogy with human health, we would say a person is healthy because we see he's energetic, maybe the skin color is ruddy. The skin color is a sign of his health, not the health itself, okay? Same way with political institutions, elections, freedom of press, courts, constitutions, rule of law, things like that are more symptoms of this, of an underlying political health than the health itself. Now, what would this health, in the case of political system, consist of? And I'm going to suggest to you, it's a very simple perspective, very obvious point, but everybody seems to go past it when they try to talk about political systems. This political health is when you have political participants who are not inclined to use force against each other. That is, they're not inclined to murder each other. Senators aren't trying to kill presidents. Presidents aren't trying to kill senators. If a group doesn't get what it wants, it doesn't start a bloody riot. It kills lots of people. If a candidate doesn't win the election he hoped to win, he doesn't start a civil war and embroil the country in years of violence. Now this, I'd say it seems obvious to us that this is a natural way for things to happen, nonviolent politics. But the truth is, all around the world, for most of the history of the world, this was what went on everywhere, normally, naturally. Leaders were trying to kill other leaders. And it was accepted not in the sense that people approved of it, but they felt that's the way the world had to work. Starting about, I, I'm giving a real quick summary of what I write about in this book that David mentioned, The History of Force. In this, just about the last 400 years, some countries started moving away from that pattern. It's a little bit mysterious how and why it happened, especially since it seems so sensible in retrospect. England, Holland, Scandinavian countries, and rulers, we would say, decided or just moved past the idea of killing each other. And when people didn't get what they wanted, they moved past the idea of starting revolutions. Okay, and the result here, when you're not going to use force, is the thing we call democracy. It's that simple. In other words, democracy wasn't an invention. You didn't have some philosopher saying, this would be a better way, let's do it. And other people saying, yeah, we see, we're going to approve of that. No, is leaders got less violent. And when you get less violent, it turns out you have to turn to these other practices, like an election. If you're not going to kill someone to get them out of office, or to decide any question, if you say, I'm not going to take out any guns, what are you going to do? Well, one first answer is you have a show of hands. And you accept it. You accept it not because it's a smart idea or it makes very much sense, because mostly it doesn't, but because what else can you do if you're not going to be nonviolent, if you're not going to pull out a gun? Same with the idea of accepting a decision of a judge or a judicial body and so forth. It's not that this body is so smart or wonderful or the people themselves are noble or non-corrupt or anything. It's that what else are you going to do if you're not going to use force? So that's basically what we're trying to say, I think, when we use the word democracy. It is a country where political participants don't resort to physical force. Now, let me give you a kind of a test of this theory. There's two ways of looking at democracy. One is institutional. You make a list of things, freedom of the press, elections, courts, say that's going to be a democracy. And I'm saying, no, it's a country where leaders aren't disposed to use force. Now, suppose we have an election in this country where the person that gets the most votes does not take office. Instead, the runner-up is given the presidency. Okay. Now, in one scenario, everybody, lots of people, the people who lost, start a civil war. They pull out the guns and they start marching on the Capitol. And when you ask them why they're doing it, they say, we're Democrats. We believe fervently in elections and that the winner should win an election or take office. And this didn't happen here, so we are fighting to reestablish the purity of democratic theory. So the country plunges into a civil war for years and years, economy goes down, people starve, whatever. Okay, situation A. Situation B, same thing happens with the election. The guy that gets the most vote isn't given the office, instead it's the runner-up. And people just shrug it off. They say, well, probably shouldn't have happened, but shucks, you know, I'm not interested in fighting, I'm too busy with other things. And they go back about their business. Which of these two countries is more democratic? You want to vote on it? Well, no, let's see what happens. The one where we had the Civil War to reestablish the principle of the winner should be the winner. How many say that's the true democracy? Okay, there's three votes for it. How many say it's where people just pass by and go on as best they can? All right, that's got a few more. Well, you're taking my definition, the definition I'm trying to urge here, that democracy really ought to be thought about as a situation where leaders have decided to abandon the use of force in their struggles in politics. Now, just to quickly bring this to the problems of what would it mean for democracy and nation building and trying to implement democracies abroad, you'd see it's not institutions. It's not that you just can go hold an election and you've created a democracy. And of course, since we've done that about 75 times, Nicaragua and Cuba and the Dominican Republic, Haiti, and so forth, and these things collapse into dictatorships and civil wars again, it's clear that that's a faulty point of view. Instead, you'd say a democracy is this place where leaders aren't disposed to fight. Okay, so if you go into a country where they're still disposed to fight, you have a violent political culture, then when you leave, they're going to go back to fighting in one form or another. You'll have a civil war, or you'll have a dictator that will be able to suppress the other guys so they can't throw him out of power. And the other side of this coin is if you go to a country that has a peaceful political culture, then you don't have to do anything in particular to set up a democracy. You can just go home or stand back or close your eyes, and they will do it. And this is the example of Germany that, yes, in this book I write about at some length, that we did just about everything wrong in Germany in terms of any helping of a democracy. But a democracy managed to emerge because the leaders, once you got rid of that violent clique of Hitler's, were peaceful. And you didn't have to do anything special. So the bottom line is, nation building in the sense of creating a democracy by invading a country is always ineffective.